Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And, Wes, the second game of the preseason is upon us here. Shortly after we're done taping this episode, you and I are going to head to the airport, jump on the team charter for Washington, D.C. Packers and Redskins on Saturday night from FedEx Field in Landover, Maryland. And there are a lot of players that I think we're all excited to see them in a second preseason game. But maybe one of the guys at the top of the list is top draft pick and second round pick Kevin King, the cornerback out of Washington. We talked a lot up until now about how it was so unfortunate he had to miss all of OTAs because of the rule about the school schedule, et cetera, et cetera. But it sure looks like he's a guy who's trying as best he can to make up for lost time.
Yeah, it's really interesting story that he has, because actually is something I talked to his former position coach, Jimmy Lake, over the summer, and just what it was like coaching him and what kind of mentality he brought to his classroom. And it's been interesting seeing the things that Lake talked about, you know, whether it was, you know, the time they spent after practice together or nights before games, the protein shakes that he would be drinking before every meeting and making sure that he finished them afterwards, just to become a complete all-around corner. Not that he's just 6'3", that he's 200 pounds, that he has the speed. He has everything you look for in a guy that's going to be a difference maker. And he's taken a lot of those same principles now and applied them in Green Bay. He's been working after practice with Davante Adams. He's been very diligent in his studying with cornerbacks coach Joe Witt Jr. And Witt Jr. even saying this past week, one of the smartest guys that he's coached in terms of just coming in the door and being able to understand the system. So there's still a long way for King to go, and he's going to need these reps and he's going to need opportunities. But if you look at his track record from where he started to where he got to, every step along the way, he's been willing to put in the work to make sure that he continues that progress.
Yeah, I was really intrigued in reading your story on our website because I had somewhat forgotten through the draft process and whatnot. But when Jimmy Lake, as you mentioned, became the secondary coach at the University of Washington, King was actually playing safety at the time.
Yeah.
He hadn't really become a full-fledged cornerback yet. So there was a bit of that transition. You look at him now, 6'3", the type of body that he has and everything, of course you're going to put him at corner rather than safety, right? But there was a transition there that he had to go through as a college player.
Yeah, and you have to remember, I mean, Washington has sort of turned into DBU a little bit. they had Marcus Peters on that roster, too, when he first came to Washington.
That's right, yeah.
Before he left the team. Sidney Jones ended up being a starter pretty much his entire career there on the boundary. Buda Baker, now a safety, I believe, for the Titans, also in that mix. They just had a lot of different guys that they could turn to. So for opportunities to get on the field, his first outlet was actually at safety, even though he was recruited as a cornerback. That was under Steve Sarkisian's staff. Then when you look at when Lake came in with Chris Peterson's staff, that's where they started him at safety. But he started putting these feelers into his ear like, hey, you know, I was recruited to play corner. So his junior year, they let him play that nickel, what they call in Green Bay, that star position. And then as a senior, after he decided to come back for one more year, played boundary corner and obviously made himself a high draft pick through his efforts.
Yeah, and we'll see as now he gets into his second preseason game with the Packers. I think the play that sticks out in a lot of people's minds from that first game, unfortunately, was the pass on the third down that turned into a touchdown for the Philadelphia Eagles. And I didn't talk to King. You did personally one-on-one. When I kept looking at the replay of that, I wonder if he thought Clay Matthews had the sack. And he just kind of got caught with his guard down for just that half a second because he thought the play was going to be over. Lesson learned, and it's a good time to learn it, right, in the preseason.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back to his upbringing, too, because he's always been a lengthy kid. You know, he arrived at Washington. He was already 6'2", and then when you get up to 190, 200 pounds, he said at first there were things when he was playing cornerback where he could just rely on his natural athleticism and his length to make plays. It was when he was working with Lake that he started to get his eyes open to how important it is to study and to diagnose and understand the concepts, not only what you're doing in the defense, but what other players are doing as well. And it does come down to focus a lot of times. And I think for a young player, that is an eye-opener because it does show you, okay, if you let up, if you take your foot off the gas for one millisecond, what can happen and how plays can play out. So certainly a learning moment for him.
Yeah, the speed of the game in the NFL, there's no way to teach it and show it until you get out there and do it. What I like about King And we talked about it coming out of the draft is Washington's defense. You mentioned Chris Peterson's staff, Jimmy Lake, the secondary coach. They were a very aggressive defense. So he's coming out of college having played a lot of man-to-man.
Yes.
He's not one of these zone cornerbacks that you have to teach him to play man-to-man in the NFL. There are certainly things that he has to learn, but he's got that man-to-man as his foundation, and I think that's why the Packers drafted him where they did.
Yeah, and don't make any mistakes. I mean, what the Packers do defensively is different than what Washington does defensively in terms of their blitz packages and the concepts that Dom Capers runs. But one of the reasons why Jimmy Lake thought he would fit so well into what the Packers are doing is because of what you just said. The fact that he has been put in man-to-man situations. He knows how to press cover. He can play the slot if they need him to. He's just a really versatile young man, and when you look at an entire season, it's that kind of versatility that made Casey Hayward a factor in his rookie year. It made Demaryius Randall a factor in his rookie year. And the Packers, obviously keeping their expectations tempered for King right now, certainly are looking for him to make an impact sometime in the near future.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, with that, Wes, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. Wes, talking about guys we're interested in seeing in the second preseason game, switching gears a little bit to maybe more of a veteran player. We saw Jeff Janis have a heck of a touchdown catch against the Philadelphia Eagles. I went back and looked at some of the statistics from Janis's career to this point. I didn't realize until I was working on it, wrote a story for our website, that was his sixth preseason touchdown. And he didn't play in any preseason games last year because he had that cast on his arm from the broken hand or broken finger or whatever it was. He had five touchdown catches his first two preseasons and now has his sixth. But that sixth one, as I wrote about, was a little bit different in terms of how it happened, and I think it showed a lot of growth and progress on the part of Janis.
Yeah, and you outlined this so well, Mike, even in our conversations directly after the game, because even before we had a chance to talk to Janis, the psychology that was involved with that play, that wasn't just a go route, that wasn't just a post, that wasn't just, Conley making a nice throw. There were so many factors in play there, and there was also a little bit of knowledge as well. Janis and Hundley had been talking amongst themselves, kind of understanding what the defense was doing, how the cornerback was guarding Janis, and there was that belief that, okay, if he made that little double move on him, that would offer an opportunity for Hundley to throw the pump fake in there,
yep.
Janis to get around him, and then threw just an absolute laser. I mean, it was a perfect pass.
That was a beautiful throw.
20-yard touchdown, and the Packers were off and running.
Yeah, I really liked I liked seeing that play out of Janis, and the reason I took the time to write the story about it is, I think when training camp started, there were a lot of questions, on the outside, just where does Jeff Janis fit in this receiving core? The Packers had seven receivers, not including Ty Montgomery, seven right. receivers on the 53-man roster for the NFC Championship as the season ended last year in Atlanta. Then you add two draft picks to the mix in D'Angelo Yancey, Malachi Dupree. You wonder, well, where does Jeff Janis exactly fit in? His first week of camp, training camp was kind of quiet. But I think this week, starting with that preseason game against the Eagles and then this week in practice, I think he really started to show up. And then we also know that his special teams play, I call it his ace in the hole.
Yeah.
He's one of the best special teams players on this team. He's a punt gunner. He's a blocker on punt return. He can return kickoffs. He's in the mix to do that. He does a lot of things on special teams, and he's really refined a lot of those things in his game.
Yeah, he has, Mike. And what's interesting, too, is so many times you hear people talk about, oh, he's a good special teams player. His player is so and so player X. But with Janis, I think the ones when you really find the truly exceptional guys, it's the guys who aren't punt returning, they aren't kicking, they aren't doing any of those things, but you still notice them. And you've noticed him over the last few years with the gunner, what he's done the last two seasons, the Packers being able to post the net averages that they've had on returns. A lot of that is a credit to him, Demetri Goodson, and the other gunners that they've had. That's been a strength of the special teams unit now for, I'd say, the last three seasons. But that, as you said, has been his ace in a hole. That's been his go-to. There's always been this, well, what if he could put it together offensively? It was just one play, but the fact that it was a check, it was an audible, it was something that was happening at the line of scrimmage in the moment, not a cookie-cutter, run-your-route play. That, I think, ultimately is the things that the Packers coaching staff wants to see from Janis now going into year four.
Yeah, and I like with what I've seen from Janis, you look at that whole package that he brings on special teams. It's easy to forget in 2015 when he was returning some kickoffs, he had three kickoff returns of 45 plus yards in 2015, a long of 70. He's in the mix to do that again this year. You look at the 68 yard punt return for a touchdown by Trevor Davis last Thursday night. A lot of good blocks were thrown on that play. Janis was one of the guys who did throw a good block to help spring Davis with that speed for the big breakaway play. And then, as you mentioned, the punt gunner, he was even doing that with the cast on his arm, I think, at the beginning of the season last year. And I think, you know, the injury through training camp last year, that may have, you know, slowed down the progress everybody was hoping for after the big playoff game in Arizona the year before. So those things can kind of get in the way. But I think we're starting to see Jeff Janis develop into a more all-around pro.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because you hear Ron Zuckel talk about this. Mike McCarthy alludes to it. He likes those safety and, you know, linebacker kind of bodies on special teams. The thing that's interesting about Janis, he gives you that at 6'3", 220 pounds.
Yeah, he's a solid 220.
But then he also gives you the speed factor, a guy that runs in the 4.4s. So that's that makes such a difference, and it's tough for a jammer that's, you know, maybe 6 feet, 190 to be able to stay stride for stride with him. And also one thing that's interesting, we talk so often about Trevor Davis and Randall Cobb on punt returns. The battle that's brewing between Trevor Davis and Jeff Janis on kickoff returns is also an interesting one to watch going forward.
Yeah, and I think we're going to be watching that closely in these final three preseason games here starting Saturday night in Washington. But with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford, Wes Hodkowitz. Wes, as we continue to look ahead here to the Washington preseason game Saturday night out at FedEx Field, I think we might start to see the pecking order at running back maybe establish itself a little bit. And I say that for a few reasons. Number one, it doesn't look like Ty Montgomery is going to play. He missed the practices, the open training camp practices this week with a lower leg injury. So that kind of moves those three rookie draft picks up the depth chart. They're going to be getting more of those reps earlier in the game. So a big opportunity for them. But then you combine that with the fact that next week, the third preseason game, the starters are going to take a chunk of those reps in the first half. We don't know, a quarter and a half, maybe the whole first half, whatever it's going to be. But this, it's sort of shaping up to be this game where Jamal Williams, Aaron Jones, Devontae Mays, you know, how this depth chart is going to sort itself out. I think it starts on Saturday night.
I think you're right, Mike. And one thing is, we always hear people talk about preseason, it's vanilla, it doesn't matter, those type of things. Tell that to young running backs in the NFL, not just Green Bay, because I think this is a lot of times where you see guys start to establish themselves. The first time I thought, going back to 2013, that Eddie Lacy was the real deal, and he was a second-round draft pick, but that this kid could play was that first preseason game we saw him against the Rams, just how punishing he ran, how forceful he ran. And it was a very small sample size, don't get me wrong, but Jamal Williams coming out of the gate, I thought we saw some of those qualities in him. Not like Lacy in terms of how he runs, but just the kind of explosiveness and the kind of freshness and just being able to really, you know, sort of diagnose what's happening in the trenches and find your way to the second level. We see it so often, Mike, with these young running backs when they come into the league, they just want to go 100 miles an hour into the hole and they end up just running into the back of their guard. But with Williams, you could see him set things up. And I thought for him, it was a good step forward. All three of those rookies, I think, with him, Aaron Jones, and also with Devontae Mays, who's had some nice practices and a nice performance against the Eagles with the snaps he had, I think all three of those guys understand what's on the line here, and that sense of urgency is something I expect to really propel them forward into these three preseason games.
Yeah, I think what stood out to me the most about Williams in the Eagles game, and it's one of those things that's hard to quantify or hard to describe. You did a good job of describing it to me. I look at that guy, those touches that he got, and you go, he belongs in the NFL. The game doesn't look too big for him. He belongs. What we've seen in pass protection from him, of those three draft picks, he's the one who's been, the leader of the group in terms of picking that up, because that is a difficult thing to pick up for a young running back in the NFL, because pressure packages from NFL defenses are not like college ones. Right. They're much more complex. It's much harder to decipher exactly what your assignment is. so far so good with Williams in that respect, and Jones and Mays obviously are going to continue working on that. I had mentioned before with the one touch that Mays got in the Eagles game on the swing pass to the sideline just has me begging for more. I want to see more of what this kid might be able to do with the ball in his hand. So I'm excited to see what unfolds on Saturday night, because we know that Mike McCarthy also isn't exactly happy with where the running game is, what the running game was able to produce, which wasn't a whole lot against the Eagles. I think it's going to be a focus against the Redskins.
Yeah, first thing to touch on there with Mays, what's impressive is when you're 5'11", 230, you expect that guy to be able to plow through the middle of the tackles, you know, right between the tackles. But being able to make a guy miss an open field is what catches my attention. To touch one more thing on, Williams was talking with Taysom Hill this week, his quarterback at BYU, and he said, I mean, the one thing people are talking about is pass protection and how that stood out. He's like, I've seen that since day one. I mean, now there's a big difference between linebackers in the NFL and what you're seeing, you know, in their conference, you know, not conference, but what their schedule is. But still, he just always was poised. When he was back there at BYU, he was always confident that Jamal Williams was going to pick up his guy and not let him get a free shot at the quarterback.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. So to have that confidence at the college level, you have to make the adjustments. You have to improve. You have to be able to hone your skills to be able to protect Aaron Rodgers. But it is a good first step for him, trying to make sure that he can handle that job.
Yeah, not to discount Aaron Jones at all. You look at his
right.
track record in college, the number of breakaway runs, the big play runs that Aaron Jones had for UTEP, it's an impressive list. And, you know, I talked to him at his locker just briefly this week and said, hey, you know, what's going to happen if you get a crease? And he's like, I can't wait. I mean, he's ready to find a crease and hit it and show that extra gear of speed that he's got. It could be pretty exciting come Saturday night. But before we go, Wes, take care of a little bit of sponsor business here. So picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, to wrap up today's show, change is a constant in the NFL. We know that. We've talked about it a lot. But if you had told me at this time last year that the three interior starters at this stage of the preseason on the Packers offensive line, TJ Lang, JC Treader, Josh Sitton, that 1 year later, all three of those starting spots would be different, I would have really questioned it. But here we are, yet even with all that change and all that turnover, the Packers don't seem to be skipping a beat here.
No, Mike McCarthy, I think, is pretty optimistic about this group, judging by his final news conference leading into this game against Washington, was asked about that, how he feels about it. And you look at it, Corey Linsley's been the constant there at center. He's,
yeah.
You know, him and JC Treader have been basically 1A, 1B there for a number of years. But at the guard position now, Jahri Evans coming in, 6-time Pro Bowler, taking over now for that right guard spot for TJ Lang. 33 years old, but I mean, the thing is about Evans is that he's coming off a pretty solid year with the Saints. I was really interested to hear Aaron Rodgers' comments about him this week, because it sounds like, I mean, he's been really happy with what he's seen from him so far. And also, although he won't attribute this quote to him, says there's probably that little bit of a chip on his shoulder, too, wanting to show that he still belongs after kind of being sort of a journeyman last year, being in New Orleans and also with Seattle. So this is a big opportunity for him. And then also for a guy like Lane Taylor. I mean, this is someone who didn't know he was going to be a starter until basically week one of the season. There were a lot of questions about it, people wondering whether or not he'd be up to the task. And then what was interesting, once week two came around, nobody was really talking about Lane Taylor again, and really that's the best compliment you can pay to an interior offensive lineman.
Yeah, no question. And we've talked a lot about how, you know, this Packers offensive line is not filled with first-round draft picks. You know, Brian Bulaga is the only one
yeah.
at right tackle who was drafted in the first round. But you look at Taylor, he wasn't even a fourth round, fifth round pick, oh, like, you know, like a TJ Lang or a Corey Linsley. This is an undrafted guy who really took the long road to the NFL. And let's be honest, when he got his first couple of opportunities, I believe it was in 2014. You know, you started to wonder, well, does this guy really have that long of a future in the NFL? Because there were some shaky moments there. But to his credit, he stuck with it, and the coaching staff had the faith in him to make the move at the end of training camp last year to put him in there in place of Josh Sitton. And the coaches and Taylor, to their credit, have never looked back.
No, they haven't. I think it was that game against the Saints in 2014 where he had to come in for – I believe it was an injured Josh Sitton.
Yeah, and that's a primetime game, the Superdome, loud as heck, and, you know, two offenses, you know, going up and down the field like crazy. A tough spot to be thrown in, no question about it.
But Taylor was his toughest critic. He said, even at the end of that season, that was something he wanted to learn from. He really needed to bounce back from it. And what's interesting to me about him is his skill set, his style, 6'3", 324 pounds. He looks the part. So once he got his footwork right, once he got everything shored up in that way, he got that chemistry down with David Bakhtiari, he really showed the type of player he can be. And Mike McCarthy said he solidified that spot last season. There wasn't even a question about it going into this offseason.
Yeah, you like the way this Packers offensive line is coming together. We talked about, you know, yeah, they want to get the running game established more. It wasn't a big focus during the spring. I think we're going to see that as the rest of this preseason continues. But Aaron Rodgers has full confidence in all five of those starters up there, and we'll see where it goes from here. Definitely. But we've got to go, so we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team and the preseason game against the Redskins on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. At Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.